even though heat indices are predicted to top 100 degrees today, summer is taking its last breath as it slowly begins to fade away. And that means fall is creeping in with its crisp, cool days and, of course, a heap of fall hunting seasons. So to give us all a preview of what's coming up, we're bringing on our old pals, the Outdoor Guys, and some very special guests this hour on the West Side Outside. I'm Rich Kramer, and I'm joined by the Outdoor Guys. They are, in no particular order, host of the syndicated TV program Northland Adventures, Dave Carlson. Dave, thanks for being here.
I'm on the guitar. Joe's on the drums.
This is the first time that the Outdoor Guys have been on with the new music, and they seemed shocked when I played it.
Can we get a loon in the background?
A loon? We can work that in there. Yeah. Also joining us, the other Outdoor Guy is Joe Knight. He's the outdoor editor for the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram. Good to have you back, Joe.
Thanks for inviting me.
And we've also got a special guest during the first half hour of this program. We're also pleased to have Gary Zimmer joining us by phone. And Gary is he's a senior biologist with the Ruffed Grouse Society, who was also recently appointed to the DNR's Natural Resources Board. Gary, thanks so much for being here.
Glad to be here today, Rich.
Our pleasure to have you. Also coming up after the half-hour mark, we're going to have George Meyer on. George is a former DNR secretary for Wisconsin, and he's the current executive director of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation. That is coming up after 10:30. Listeners, we want to hear from you. In the meantime, what do you most look forward to this in the fall? Are you an upland game birds type of a person, waterfall, goose, diehard bow hunter? Let us know. Give us a call, 800-228-5615. And if you've got any ruffed grouse question out there, I imagine that Gary Zimmer would champ at the bit to answer it. So give us a call, 800-228-5615. Gary, so I guess first we'll start with you, and I'm just wondering, how big of a pastime is grouse hunting in Wisconsin?
Well, it's pretty popular to a lot of us. We look forward to the wonderful days out there. This is not one of the few outdoor-related sports, or especially hunting sports, that you don't have to get up at dawn to go out and enjoy the birds and enjoy the beautiful scenery we have. So it's very popular. Many of us who do it, and I know Joe and Dave would echo this for sure, if you're out there for a bag limit, you better not go grouse hunting.
That's true. Gary, I was just looking at the state's trapping and hunting small game and large game outlook for 2013, and they're talking that the estimated grouse harvest last year was about 353,000. Number of people estimated to be hunting grouse last year, about 87,000 in Wisconsin, and percentage of small game hunters pursuing rough grouse is about 37%.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're not going to dispute those, but what do those numbers reflect? Are they up or down?
Well, we've been averaging around that 100,000 person mark for a long time. We're down slightly, but typically when our cycle starts tipping and going the other way, it does drop a little bit. We're probably down, you know, if you can look at most of the hunting numbers, and you're seeing about a 4% drop. And it kind of shows even with rough grouse hunting, we're a little down.
We're seeing a lot of activity for youth and novice hunters in the deer hunting arena and also in waterfowl hunting. We don't see very often, though, programs for small game hunters, specifically grouse. We do some for pheasant. There are some pheasant programs, but not for grouse. Can there be more done?
Yes, I think so, Dave. And we are trying to do that individually. We have very active chapters in the Ruffed Grouse Society, and a lot of those folks are getting more and more into the mentoring. You may not hear about them as big events, but there's more and more of that one-on-one, one-on-two type things going on, and we're trying to promote that. Obviously, every time or any time an opportunity, you can take a youngster out there to see this. This isn't the easiest thing to do, but it sure is fun, especially if you're working with a dog, and every youngster that has that opportunity to get out there and watch a dog work gets kind of that thrill, and pretty soon maybe they will talk their parents into having a bird dog or something to tag along the woods with them.
I know when the woodcock are coming through, this Joe Knight speaking, that's a you can walk a long time between grouse when it's only grouse around, but when the woodcock start migrating through and you have a dog, then you can get a lot of points. I've taken novice hunters out then, and we don't always shoot a lot of woodcock, but we have opportunities, and we see some dog work. So.
Mm-hmm. Excellent point, Joe. And, that is correct. And I was fortunate last year to have a nice short hunt with Dave, and we experienced just exactly what you were saying, the right timing of the year, and the birds were down there, and a great time to be out there, and especially a great time to be out there with a youngster in the woods.
Can you describe some of the efforts that the state and the Rough Grouse Society and conservation groups are doing to improve the habitat for both grouse and woodcock?
Sure. There's a lot going on across the state for young forest management and working with things, and especially targeting lately woodcock habitat. That's something that's been avoided, and we've seen the drops in the woodcock population for the last 30 years. And it really ties in, at least what we can do for it, is woodcock habitat, and that often is young forest habitat, either aspen habitat or alder habitat in moist soil areas that are key areas to have these in that very young condition, and a lot of efforts going forward in that arena right now, working with a lot of different agencies, and our organization is doing that, doing projects all across the state of Wisconsin and benefiting habitat for woodcock and grouse as well, and then working in timber management programs, active timber management programs, benefit both of those species and anything else that requires and needs young forest habitats.
Kind of sounds similar to what we heard with James Kroll, young forest. You need young forest to give the habitat that these animals need.
Oh, sure. And there's the key. It's not just, those grouse enthusiasts and woodcock enthusiasts like young forest habitat, but it means so much to a lot of our wildlife species, and Dr. Kroll's report highlights the importance, especially in the Northwoods, of having a good component of young forest habitat for secure cover for species as well as good food sources.
Kroll's report suggested that the private landowners need help, and mm-hmm. There are programs out there now and have been for a few years, are there not, Gary, that where private landowners get help from the state or your group?
Right. There's a lot of incentive programs out there, both state and federal programs, to provide cost share type programs for landowners to get into better management on their property for wildlife habitat. Our organization is doing quite a few things. Our biggest target for private landowners is our Wisconsin Coverts Project, which is a 3-day training workshop that we sponsor and fund along with some other folks, and get a lot of people and use them as trainers. Your neighbor tells you something, you'll listen a little quicker than you will to even an agency person, and that's what's really benefited, and that program has benefited almost 1 million acres of habitat in the state of Wisconsin over the years as people are seeing better ways to improve and manage their forest land.
Say, gentlemen, we've got our first caller of I keep thinking it's afternoon, but it's morning. We've got two on the line, actually, but first we're going to go to New Auburn, and we've got Kay on the phone. Kay, you're on the air. Thanks for calling in. Are you there, Kay?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
I wonder, when do the sandhill cranes head south? We live in New Auburn.
Anyone?
Well, I've seen them there well into the goose hunting season when it's pretty cold, and you see them hanging around even sometimes into deer season. And the cranes that I'm thinking about are over along the Flambeau River. There's quite a staging area there, but there's also a big staging area down at Babcock at Sandhill Wildlife Area.
Crex Meadows is before they migrate, they kind of all get together in what we call staging, and that's the time if you want to see a whole bunch of cranes in one place, go to somewhere like Crex Meadows where they're.
We've had a family here in our field, for the last couple months, and so we were just wondering how long they're going to be here.
They'll probably, as Joe said, as the weather, the days grow shorter and the weather gets colder, they will probably be staging with other families and getting ready for their flight to the Caribbean, the Gulf Coast.
Yeah, the last ones to stage are the ones with, obviously, with young birds that they're taking care of and still raising and being with.
Yeah, there's a young one here. Yeah.
We're seeing a lot of large groups now, and most of those are non-breeders or ones that weren't successful. And very shortly, the young birds will be joining in with those folks at the staging here.
All right, Kay, thanks so much for the call. And let's go now to Ellsworth. We've got a grouse-related question here. Jay is on the phone, and Jay, thanks for calling in. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Rich, what I'm calling about is I'm an older fella, and when I was hunting grouse in the 60s and 70s in west central Wisconsin, there was a lot of birds, hardly any turkeys. Now the grouse are scarce as hens. I mean, I can go out, and I'm lucky if I see one bird, and I don't know if there's a correlation between the fact that the turkeys are everywhere and they're out competing the grouse or what's going on, but I just know in the 60s and 70s, the grouse hunting was a whole lot better in west central Wisconsin than it is now.
All right. Thanks for that. Gary?
Yeah, Jay, that's an excellent question and observation, and one I get quite a bit. It was also a question that we tackle with a recent research project in southwest Wisconsin, which, as you probably know, that was a heyday of grouse back in the 70s and 80s with actually drumming counts and drumming densities at that time higher than has ever been recorded in the Northwoods, which is kind of shocking. So it was great habitat at one time. And yes, around that time, turkeys came in and grouse population seemed to decline, and I hear that as a cause and effect. But if you really look at it, and our research project really started to tackle into that, they looked back and compared habitat back in the 70s and 80s and to habitat now. And while there's small pockets of good grouse habitat now down in that part of the world, overall, the grouse habitat is really poor in a lot of that country where you're not regenerating. You've got pole size or older or more mature oak stands in particular, and those are poor places for grouse to move through. When we put radios on birds in the Viroqua and Richland Center area, we followed the birds. They were surviving very well in the winter, hiding in cover, and as soon as spring came, those females started looking for nest sites and wandering around, and they were getting nailed. The survival rate of hens during that study were 15%. The males were surviving at a very high rate, actually, about 70%, which was fine. But a 15% survival rate, meaning that only 15% of the hens were making it from year one to year two. You're not going to have a growing population with that. And it really came down to habitat and habitat across the landscape for those birds.
All right, Jay, thank you so much for the call. And you mentioned the bird cycle earlier, Gary. I'm wondering, where are we right now in the grouse cycle, or is it different in different parts of the state?
Well, it is different in different parts of the state. It's associated really with our winters, and we haven't seen much of a cycle over the last many, many years from around Eau Claire South. We always say 29. Now, it's not exactly that. North of that, you see the evidence of the cycle. South of that, you really don't see much of an up-and-down cycle as you do in the north. And we are past the peak with the cycle in the state of Wisconsin. Usually the cycle years are around the 10th year. So 2010 is typically around 2009, 2010. You could say we're the peak, and then it drops. We did have a little bump last year in the Northwoods. Excellent brood production a spring ago, and then resulted with a little bump, and we saw that in the drumming counts this spring. Slightly up with the drumming counts in the Northwoods because we had such a great hatch last year in a lot of the northern part of the state.
A reminder to the listeners, we're talking about the fall hunting seasons. We've got the outdoor guys on the program, Joe Knight and Dave Carlson. We've also got Gary Zimmer on the phone right now, and he is the senior biologist for the Ruffed Grouse Society, also recently appointed to the DNR board. If you've got a question or a comment for Gary or the outdoor guys, give us a call, 800-228-5615. Gary, I think I cut you off. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's right.
I was just going to say this. We should tell our listeners, of course, that the small game hunting season for most species starts this weekend.
Yeah.
With grouse and woodcock and I believe squirrel as well, is it not?
Yeah.
Yeah, gray squirrel. Yeah. What are the conditions out there? I know right now it's pretty summery around here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's going to be a little tough this weekend for getting birds. You know, the heat does a few things, and one, it keeps the birds in shade and away from some places that you and I want to tackle and tromp through. But it also is tougher on dogs. Real poor scenting conditions. So those who are hunting with dogs, it's a lot tougher for these dogs to locate these birds and stick with them. They may come across some scent, but they aren't able to follow that scent and figure out where these birds are moving through.
Water becomes critical, too, locating that. The birds want it just like people.
Right.
We should, and a note for the dogs, if you're going to hunt into the afternoon, you want to probably bring water with you or make sure you're hunting in an area that has water, I know.
And realize, and this has been seen a lot of different openers for different species, but if you have dogs, these dogs, if they haven't been out and running during the summer, this is the time where you want to take it the easiest on the dogs, especially with the heat.
One species for which there will be no season in Wisconsin this year is the sharp-tailed grouse, and that's because the booming counts were down and state has decided to close the season. That's happened before. It reopened. I don't know. What's the future now, and how's Rough Grouse involved? Rough Grouse Society involved?
We watch that. There is a Sharp-Tailed Grouse Society in the state of Wisconsin, a small group. So we work with them on projects or can work with them and support their efforts. We haven't worked directly with Sharp-Tailed Grouse populations, though, through the society.
What do you see, Gary, what's going on with the sharp tails? We were talking before the show. I have a friend who's been training his dogs up in Namekagon Barrens, and he's seen a lot of sharp tails. Of course, he has very good dogs. They're field trial champions. But is that just an exception to elsewhere around the state where the sharp tails are declining? And should we even have a season on sharp tails? They seem to be kind of have a slim hold on there.
That is
in Wisconsin.
Yeah, that is true, Joe. It's right on that edge. There are populations, and where there are populations, you know, we're still able to have a very restricted hunt for them. What your friend was probably seeing, it's kind of the same thing with rough grouse this year. Our numbers coming in the spring were pretty good because of the excellent conditions a year ago for brood production. So we had our numbers up, and as I understand, sharptail numbers were up. But this year, the cold, late spring, which most of us can't even remember anymore, was really bad for the birds. And we've had a reduction in our rough grouse numbers and our brood counts, and I'm afraid that some of that is what's happening with the sharp-tail numbers. Just terrible conditions for woodcock, for rough grouse, even for turkeys early, but turkeys are very persistent, whereas a rough grouse will re-nest and try a second try if they've failed with the first one. Turkeys will often try two and three times.
Hmm.
And so there's a lot less chance for, or a lot better chance for a turkey population to survive through a bad spring than a grouse or a rough grouse or a sharp tail population.
What are some of the goals related to small game and hunting in general and so forth that you're bringing into that Natural Resources Board position that you hold?
Well, I can bring in, being a biologist, a longtime biologist, a background and a understanding of populations and population changes and seeing where and what we can do and how we can benefit both the species and those people who pursue them either for hunting or non-game activities. And I think I can bring that broad thought process into the board, and I've been very pleased with the folks on the board and accepting me to the board. And I'm in a learning curve yet, as I can understand now why they give the 6-year term. The first year or so is a very big learning curve, and I'm learning things that I knew nothing about before and trying to get up to speed on some of those things. So I can bring in, I guess, the things that I know the most about, and that's things like wildlife populations and wildlife management.
Gary, I realize you're a short timer on the board. is the board still a viable entity? It seems to me more and more that the legislature has taken matters into its own hands in passing laws for better or worse, usually for worse, that affect conservation. Is anyone still listening to the Resources Board, and do you want to explain the role that you play?
Right. We are a policy. You know, we make the policies, but the legislation sets the laws and regulations, and in a sense always have. It does look like, and what I've seen lately is you have seen and heard more about it, but they have always been and always will be the lawmaking group. They've taken a few things and a few more things than they have in the past, and we still are a viable board, and I think it's very important to have a citizen board helping and leading that. And I see we're very effective at times, and I think we do, and the legislators listen to what the citizens and the board have to say on crucial matters.
So with so much ahead on both the resources management and the things and your own professional background, you got time for a few hunts this fall?
I sure hope so. Yeah, no, I have some hunts planned, and you almost have to schedule them now. That's a disappointing thing, but there's a targeted retirement out in the future, and when that comes, there's going to be a big swath of fall available for grouse and woodcock hunting.
Are you going to be out Saturday in the heat, Gary, or are you going to stay in and watch a football game?
I won't be watching a football game. It'll be either, I'll be honest, I'll either be out with the dogs, which I probably will be early in the morning, and then I'll be, I've got to lay out a timber sale on the property that I own, so I'll be out there one way or another, but I think the dogs will get the early morning cool time, and I'll have to spray paint in the warm part of the day.
Gary, real quick before we let you go, if there's one thing, you know, a person that's interested or a person that's got a child they want to get involved with grouse hunting, where's their first turn? Just get out in the woods, or should they team up with someone with a dog?
I would recommend to team up with someone with a dog, or just to enjoy that part of it and see what it's about. But you don't have to have a dog to grouse hunt. Walking in the woods, getting out in the woods, enjoying the woods is a very, very important factor for any of us. And it, you know, to carry that gun and pursue this wonderful bird is worth it for anyone. But
all right, gentlemen, any last questions?
No, I thank you, Gary, for being with us.
Thanks. Yeah. Dave, Joe, and Rich, appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Gary Zimmer is a senior biologist with the Ruff Grouse Society. He was also recently appointed to the DNR's Natural Resources Board. Joined us by phone. Gary, thanks so much. We're going to take our break now, and when we come back, we're going to have George Meyer of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation on the program to talk about some of the interesting doings of the legislature and the DNR with regard to grants and some land that is used for hunting up in northern Wisconsin. This is the West Side Outside. We've got Joe Knight of the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram and Dave Carlson of Northland Adventures on the program. And George Meyer will join us after the break. You're listening to the West Side Outside on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in this morning, this humid morning. It's going to be a pretty hot day out there, so do take care and stay hydrated. We have the outdoor guys on this hour. We're talking about the fall hunting seasons. We just got off the phone with Gary Zimmer of the Ruffed Grouse Society, and now we're going to bring on another special guest, George Meyer of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation. Of course, we've got Joe Knight of the Eau Claire Leader-Telegram and Dave Carlson of Northland Adventures. If you've got a question or a comment for any of our guests, give us a call at 800-228-5615. The number again, 1-800-228-5615. And now joining us is George Meyer from his office, I believe, in Madison. Thanks so much for being with us, George.
Thank you for being asked, for asking me.
A lot of news happening out there right now, and I'm sure we've got some questions for you. Dave, it looks like you're champing at the bit here.
How you doing, George? Dave Carlson, Eau Claire.
Doing very well, Dave. Good to talk to you again.
A lot has been happening in the past week or two. First of all, the job of the media in this, what kind of job have they done, the outdoor media?
They've done the outdoor media and the mainstream media both have done an excellent job of getting the story out on the sporting heritage grant fiasco that's been taking place. Candidly, it was the investigative reporters and sports writers that, in fact, brought out the problems with this, what was going on behind the scenes, the major influence of partisan politics and cronyism in setting aside this $500,000 for their favored group. And, well, I'll tell you, if anybody deserves it, the media deserves for bringing this to light.
I think before we go any further, let's kind of give some background for those that may not know. I imagine most people know what's going on, but there was a grant slipped into the budget, $500,000 to promote supposedly getting kids into hunting and fishing, but the grant was tailored so that only one group really seemed to be the intended recipients. A lot of news came up, a lot of outcry, and then at the very last moment, the Governor Walker canceled the grant, and I'm wondering what your thoughts are on that. Did he make the right decision, and was it on time or too late?
No, it was perfect. The Wildlife Federation put out a press release applauding the governor for doing that. We put it out first thing this morning. He made the decision Thursday of last week. And we've laid out some suggestions. I mean, the purpose of the grant was excellent to further the recruitment and retention of hunters. And many organizations are interested in doing that and have projects of some kind going on, and some excellent conservation organizations. The way the grant was written, any group that was affiliated with a national group could not apply. So that knocked out groups like the Turkey Federation, Wildlife Federation, Chota Limited, Ducks Unlimited chapter in the state, on and on. Pheasants Forever has a very active program. But we all are doing something on this, and with some resources, could do a lot more in terms of getting more mentors for new hunters coming in, both youth and adults. And we made some recommendations in that press release to legislators and the governor and the secretary on how to do it and have a inclusive, broad-based program involving all these groups. These groups would each get a small part of that $500,000. We could really get some programs on the ground within the next year or 18 months.
Some conservation clubs with really strong records, too. They have affiliations with national organizations. This kind of rules them out as well. People who have a proven track record in doing programs for the youth and for novices. And this struck them as well. So should we go back to the drawing board and rewrite who would be eligible and just hold off issuing any money?
Yes, and that was our recommendation to the legislators that received this. They have to go back and change the statute. DNR can't just decide it's going to split this up different. DNR's hands were tied on that I could only go to one person, one group. And we're going to be, we've sent this out to all the legislators, giving them this model, set up grants for individual groups. And it should be competition, so everybody's got a fair shot. But we've, in fact, asked for a second thing. We asked for DNR, before they issue that money, to get all the groups in a room for once on this. And each group can say, okay, this is what we're doing. So other groups can see what each other group is doing. DNR may get some, I'm sure we'll get some good ideas from this. And let's get all the groups talking, not just one or two involved. And I think that's been part of the problem. You need a plan before you spend $500,000. And unfortunately, that hasn't been done.
So how did this all get rolling, George? I mean, with no public scrutiny.
It seemed like there was a plan somewhere.
It was in a handful of people. And, I mean, I don't want to get into all the dirty side of this, but the organization that proposed it has been very active in partisan political politics on one side, very active in the last 4 years. They've got very good friends in the governor's office and the legislature at the top of DNR. It's a very close-knit situation. And this was, you know, they convinced majority leader of the then majority leader of the assembly, he's since resigned, to take another government post, to in fact put this into the budget bill that was going through the Joint Finance Committee. No public hearings. I mean, this is $500,000. And the members of the committee, now it is voted for unanimously, 16-0. So you had both members of both parties voting for it. But, I mean, there was no explanation of really what this was about. And, of course, it was being sold as, well, this is to promote hunter recruitment retention. Well, anybody would vote for that. But no one pointed out these criteria that would narrow it down to one group. You know, we saw that. We just didn't even think about applying for it. And then DNR, and I, to be fair, they had 60 days to get this grant out of the door. But they made a mistake. They posted it on the website. Most people just don't go, you know, scrolling through DNR's website for every nook and cranny. They didn't put out a press release, which they do on virtually everything else. We've been told I was in oversight. I take it at face value. And but then even other groups wouldn't find out about it. Most would not have been eligible. But I know one of our affiliate clubs, Wisconsin Waterfall Association, would have been because they are just a state-based organization.
No, George, Joe Knight here. I don't blame DNR for choosing the only applicant, but I do blame them for what you just mentioned, not sending out a news release. I have a hard time believing that's an oversight because anyone who works in the media in Wisconsin, you get a steady stream of news releases
every
from DNR from much less consequential thing than a $500,000 loan that's out there. So I do blame them for that. But getting away from the politics of it a little bit, in your news release, you want to convene sort of a United Nations of different sportsmen's clubs or conservation clubs that are involved in teaching kids. And in that news release, too, you mentioned one that had mentors, tying up or connecting mentors with young people. Can you explain that?
And it's a group that's one of our affiliates now, CAMO, K-A-M-O, all capital, Kids and Mentors Outdoors. And the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation and CAMO have formed a strategic partnership because I truly believe, and I've been on this issue of hunter recruitment retention for youth 10 years, and it's a tough knot to untie. And, I mean, there's some really good things that are being done to get kids involved in hunting, like learn to hunt and trap and what, and those types of programs, and fishing days and et cetera, skills days. But and CAMO realized, and I fully agree, that's not going to a one attempt or one experience, which they'll love, without turkey hunting with a mentor or deer hunting or whatever, is not going to get a kid that who has never hunted before and family doesn't hunt to become a hunter. It takes follow-up. And they've come up with this great model, the mentor part of CAMEL, which is they have, I think it's 5 or 6 chapters across the state, throughout the state, and these members follow up with those students. They have learned to hunt, but then they'll it's sort of like the big boys, big brothers, big sisters program. They'll sort of adopt them as their mentees and students, and continue following up for 2 or 3 years, and get these students, okay, what are you doing? Let's go out and do this kind of thing. And, yeah, it takes time. But if you're going to really turn someone into a hunter or trapper or angler, you need to provide some constant support and get their family involved so the family becomes a support group. I am convinced CAMEL has the right model. And that's why we've endorsed it, and I'm going to try to export it to the 185 hunting fishing and trapping groups that belong to the Federation.
George, you mentioned the Waterfowl Association, Wisconsin Waterfowl Association, as being an example of somebody that is not affiliated with a national group, but yet could do a good job of running a program like the one that CAMO's interested in as well. Yesterday's St. Paul Pioneer Press reported that hunter numbers in Minnesota are on the increase. They're still not close to the peaks that they've had in the 1990s, but they credit some of the increases in small game hunting. A survey that's turned out by their DNR suggests a spillover from the youth waterfowl programs that they waterfowl hunting programs that they've been doing, like Wisconsin has for a number of years. And there's some spillover there, and it's starting to show up in the small game hunting numbers. Do you buy into something like that? That one particular, or what about the deer hunting youth events we have now? As well.
Well, I do buy into that. I mean, not every youth is wants to be a deer hunter. I mean, I think many of us, I suspect, on this phone call started out not deer hunting. I tell you, where I grew up, there weren't any deer when I grew up, but it was small game hunting. In that case, it was pheasants and other game birds. And rabbits and squirrels, things of that nature. And I think it's got to be a multifaceted. If you get them involved in small game hunting, eventually they may become a deer hunter or other sports or start to go into trapping or whatever. Or duck hunting. I don't think there's any one way. And learn to hunt programs, I know there are examples of waterfowl and whatever, and we need to continue those. And you got to sort of fit the programs to the kids and what the kids want. But it needs to be broader than just deer-based because that for some youth, that's not what they want to do or can't quite candidly, depending on their age, capable of safely and confidently doing.
You've been doing a great job your organization has at the McKinsey Environmental Education Center where you were working with kids and so forth.
Let's take a break real quick. We'll talk about that when we come back. I wanted to remind people that they can give a call and ask a question of either the outdoor guys or George Meyer. George Meyer is the executive director of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation, former DNR secretary for many years. And we will be right back. 1 minute break, and we'll get back. We'll talk about the McKinsey Wildlife Education Center. So stay tuned. This is the West Side Outside. I'm Rich Kramer, and you're listening to the West Side Outside on Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks for tuning us in on right here on 88.3 and 88.7. We are talking about all things outdoors with the outdoor guys, Joe Knight of the Eau Claire Leader Telegram and Dave Carlson of Northland Adventures. We're also joined on the phone by George Meyer. He is the former DNR Secretary for the state of Wisconsin and also is the Executive Director of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation. Gentlemen, sorry to cut you all off, but I wanted to get that break done and before we got talking about the McKinsey Wildlife Center. But also I wanted to remind people that they can call in with their questions or comments, 800-228-5615. And Dave, you were asking a question about the McKinsey Wildlife?
Right. George, you've been stripped of $239,000 to for your involvement at the center for running the programs that you have there. Is this retribution in what I call Grantgate?
Well, there are some ties, and I'll tell you the tie that we've been able to uncover. We haven't talked about it publicly, but some of the same groups that were behind this Sporting Heritage Grant fiasco were involved in working with DNR to try to get control the center for their own programs. As they ended up, they decided it wouldn't work, but by then, DNR was well down this path. So there was that influence that helped stimulate it, and I mean, there's really close ties between those groups and some of the leaders at DNR. Unfortunately, it came to bear. But the other thing that really had an impact in our contract being canceled, and by way for the leaders, the McKinsey Environmental Center at Point Ed is a broad-based environmental education center serves, it's a school-based system. So, I think there's like about 80 schools throughout southern and central Wisconsin use it as an overnight facility and a day facility to come in. It's 250 acres, outstanding education materials, including one of the only native wildlife exhibits, live exhibits in the state. Been in existence for 30 years. But what happened is about almost 10 years ago, 8 years ago, DNR, for budgetary reasons, was going to close it. We opposed it, as well as the local group, and we were successful in the Natural Resources Board preventing that. But then we were asked to come in. We had never done anything like this before, to come in and put together a plan to run it. We did. We took the big risk. This would have been as much as our then budget, and negotiated a contract. Now, to put in perspective, currently, well, at that time, there were about 9,000 students here went through there. And but since 2006, when we took it over, we're up to 16,000 students. And we do it for less than DNR did it, and Canley for less than DNR can do it now. And I think they're finally starting to admit it, but it's a little bit late. But the other reason behind this was DNR does have this major recruitment and retention program, and they were going to use this as a facility to do it. Well, we're doing some of that now, but what they're proposing, this facility isn't capable of doing. There's not a shooting facility on the site in Canley. That's going to be important to any new major effort to have some kind of shooting range. We have an air gun trailer we bought for the facility to use. And if you have a statewide program, you know, the draw to McKenzie is going to be within about a 50, 75-mile range for any students coming in or mentors. And they're really going to put a lot of money into one facility. And then on top of it, the cost estimate to run the program that they were asking, because they added all these new programs, was somewhere north of $800,000. Hmm. That's on top of, what the school-based educational programs would be. In addition, they wanted the new vendor to take care of all the major repairs on the building for the next 10 years. There's 30 of them, and out of that 30, 26 are more than 40 years old or 80 years old.
Where do those dollars where do those dollars come from now, George?
Well, we right now, let's say for the school-based program, DNR gives us about $240,000. We raise, along with the Friends of McKenzie, a couple hundred thousand dollars, so we're matching them almost 50-50. But to ask us to take over, they wanted us to do this for nothing. Assume they're 240, our 200 to run the existing programs, and then come up with this $800,000 to run these other programs, plus assume potentially over 10 years, millions of dollars of repairs to these facilities. That's the reason no one else even thought of applying for it. We put in a bid saying we'll do what we're doing now for $240,000, and increase, and we gave how we could increase our involvement in all these other efforts there. The waiting material was 55% was, can you comply with the financial requirements? Of course we didn't, because we asked for money rather than say we would do it for nothing. And so our score came in low. We knew that before we submitted it. We surely didn't want to resubmit one because we didn't want DNR to say no one's interested and we're going to close. No, we're not going to be there January 1st. DNR is going to assume it, and we wish them well. The big success is, and for us and the Friends, is in February of this year, they wouldn't guarantee they were going to continue the broad-based school environmental education program and put these 16,000 kids out on the street. They have now been forced to say that they are going to continue those programs. Huh. And that's all we want, the Federation wants. We didn't, like I said, 8 years ago, we weren't even in this business. And believe me, we can now dedicate our time to these other things, such as entry recruitment and retention.
It sounds, Joe Knight here, it sounds like a bad deal. I know we haven't paid as much attention to that issue because it's more of a it's a little bit out of our circulation area, but I think DNR does do a good job at like Lake Wissota State Park with education and at the Ice Age Visitor Center, although they have a skeleton staff and they're going on a lot of volunteer help. I know the naturalist up at the Ice Age Center, he's unmarried, and I think he lives there full time. I think he's there on Christmas showing people around. So it's only, it's a bare-bones operation. So to kick you guys out who are doing it, I'm sure, much more cheaply than DNR could do it. And say somehow DNR, in its very diminished budget, is going to come up with staff folks to do this. And the other idea that strikes me as funny is they're basically sounds like they're saying the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation isn't hook and bullet enough to run this thing to teach kids. And this is a group of sportsmen, a coalition of sportsmen's groups. So it sounds odd all the way around.
You still do the program for youth from around the state down at Oshkosh, don't you?
Yes, and, we run Learn to Hunt programs.
Right.
At McKenzie, we've got a bear Learn to Hunt and whatever. I mean, telling us, we're made up of 185 hunting, fishing, and trapping groups. I mean, our clubs laugh when they see that in the newspapers. They know, we get criticized for being active supporters of wolf hunting in the state. So it's sort of funny when people make that implication.
I got to ask you, what comes next? These are two unforeseen circumstances that arose. What do you think's out there yet?
Well, the one thing I hope. The object lesson from this, and I think in one respect, this whole incident was good. A lot of this bad political stuff, partisanship, and a lot of money coming from pretty extreme groups, and I'm not talking about the groups that have been mentioned in the paper, but they're getting some of their money from groups. I think if sportsmen knew about, they would really be upset, and in fact, some of that's come out in the paper, and it's very extreme and a very partisan, and that's been funneled through these groups and other groups into the executive branch of this government and the legislative branch, and has become controlling on conservation issues, which conservation has always been, in my 40 years, bipartisan effort. I mean, when I started, the leading people in conservation and legislature were the Republicans, and the Democrats were more just urban people, and they liked parks and stuff like that, but they wouldn't talk about hunting and stuff like that, and that's been lost. I'm not saying all that, but there's a lot of good Republican legislators supporting conservation, but the leadership at times has not been, and these projects often get driven by those that are getting a large sum of money from some of these groups. And if, in fact, we can just use this as an example, say, okay, let's get away from that.
George, excuse me, we've got a caller on the line, and we are very close to the top of the hour. So if we can squeeze this one last call in, I think it's about something that we were going to talk about anyway. So right now we go to Eau Claire. Jane is on the line. Jane, thank you so much for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, a couple of things, especially. I get a little concerned because the Department of Natural Resources is for everyone, not just hunters. And, it seems to me that a lot of things are geared around that and about how much money is going to be brought into the state by hunters. And I think tourism is a tremendous place, where they should be having more of this sort of thing. The other thing I'm really concerned about is trying to close the land up north. We had a tree farm, and we allowed hunters. It was with managed tree farm law, and we had people that hunted on our. We allowed everyone to hunt on our land. And I just resent the idea that they would want to close lots and lots of space up north where people could be doing other sorts of things.
All right, Jane, we'll leave it there. And George Meyer, we've got only a couple minutes left. What are your thoughts on the bill that looks like it's likely to pass that will close off 3,500 acres? We'll exempt it from the managed forest law while the company Gogebic Technics still gets the tax break.
We've been very involved in that issue. In fact, we're the only sports group that testified this last week, and we oppose it because it's written too broad. Well, I want to be very fair to the company. there was a terrible incident up there, and the group that did it, I think it was the Earth First, a bunch of radical environmental groups, and most of the protesters out there are just local citizens and peace-loving people. But this group was very threatening. If you've seen the tape, it was very bad. And then they promised on their website they're coming back. So, I mean, there are some legitimate reasons to protect the workers up there. And not only the workers doing the mining, one thing, the company's going to have biologists and other people out there doing surveys in the mining site for the applications for the permit. So they're going to need some security. So there is a need for security. We think this legislation is too broad, and we've offered to work with the company to tailor it to meet the security needs, but not just close this 4,000 acres totally, and clearly it's not going to have to be all totally closed for the 6, 7, 8 years it's going to take till the permit process works its way through. So the mining company seems to be listening to us. I think the legislation is probably going to pass, but they have the ability to be more flexible. In one way or another, we want to keep as much land as possible and still protect the workers so that recreational users, and it's not just hunters, it's a beautiful area. It's often used by the other groups that Jane mentioned.
All right, George Meyer, thank you so much for joining us. George Meyer is the executive director of the Wisconsin Wildlife Federation. He was also the DNR secretary for Wisconsin for a number of years under Tommy Thompson and other governors I can't think of right now. But, George, thank you so much. Also, thank you to Gary Zimmer for joining us earlier. Outdoor Guys, of course, thank you as well. Also like to thank Team Westside for helping out with the program, Mort Cypress on-air production, Henry Lippold for producing, and Dean Kallenbeck and Tiffany Coggins for keeping it all on track. This is the West Side Outside. We'll be back next Monday for a regular edition of the West Side. So until then, stay cool out there. Have a safe and productive week. We'll see you, or we'll chat again on Monday morning.